शरणं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोः श्रुत्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः. My pranams to most revered Gita Prana Mataji. Pranams to all the Matajis. Namaskars to all the devotees gathered to attend this. So I am happy to dwell on this topic, Jnana Mishrita Bhakti, which is the special fort of Sri Ramakrishna. The whole point is, Sri Ramakrishna is the great prophet of harmony. He teaches us how to harmonize all the faculties in us. This bhakti, jnana, devotion, knowledge, meditation, the propensity for work, karma yoga, all of these find their place in Sri Ramakrishna's philosophy. So, and he shows us how to harmonize all of these. If you read the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, there you will repeatedly find Sri Ramakrishna saying, Shuddha Bhakti, Ashuddha Jnana, act. It is one thing only. The manifestation may appear different, but the experience is the same of Shuddha Bhakti, pure love, pure devotion and pure knowledge. And many times Sri Ramakrishna says this. Also, he is very clear why bhakti is to be developed, even if we are oriented towards knowledge. Bhakti is to be developed. And if we are oriented towards bhakti, still the discriminative intellect is to be developed. Sri Ramakrishna is very clear about this. He says in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, and this also you will find at many places, that he says, as long as we are in the jurisdiction of Shakti, as long as we are in the elaka of Shakti, we need to do this, what is called Sakar Sagun Upasana, approaching God as He appears to us, as He appears to our senses and mind. So, Sakar and Sagun Upasana is nothing but the worship of God with form and with attributes, because we are just now in that realm. So, this kind of sadhana cannot be dispensed with, because Advaita, the supreme knowledge of Nirgun Brahman, is not about thinking. It is transcending mind. So as long as we are comfortable in the mind, cozy in the mind, and with our senses in full function, our mind functioning, so long bhakti is to be cultivated. Sri Ramakrishna is very clear about this. And it is, he says, only when one attains the highest state of samadhi, then one opens to the fact of pure awareness, and that is when the highest knowledge is attained. And para bhakti and this highest knowledge, para jnana, you can say, are not different. They are one and the same thing. And then Sri Ramakrishna explains the nature of God so beautifully in these parables, which again you find in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. See, one who has dived deep into the Gospel, he actually doesn't need anything else. For the simple reason, the entire gamut of the highest spiritual knowledge you will find in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. The Master's own experiences in his own words spontaneously coming out, being given out for the welfare of this world, because Sri Ramakrishna's mind dwelt perpetually in the highest state of samadhi. And it came out of that state only to give us this knowledge, this wisdom of the reach of the human mind, the reach of the mind, the nature of God, the nature of Brahman. To give us this knowledge, he comes out from time to time, and these are recorded words of the great master, right from the state of samadhi, what he speaks. All these records you find in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. So anyone who is interested in the pure spiritual life should naturally connect to this literature. You find this beautiful description of the nature of God in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. He says, see, there is water all around. Imagine there is water everywhere. Now this water, you can say it is like Brahman. But this water condenses into ice whenever there is a cooling influence on the water. Isn't it? You have been seeing how icebergs are formed. in the Arctic and the Antarctic. So icebergs, they are condensations of water due to extreme cold. So also Sri Ramakrishna says, due to the cooling influence of the Bhakta's love, this pure consciousness, which is Brahman, condenses into forms with names. And it takes a form according to the desire, the wish of the devotee. Ye yathama prapadyante dams tathaiva bhajamyaham, Bhagavad Gita says. Lord Krishna is saying that I take the form which my devotee desires. And that is how the formless comes to us in with form. And again, Sri Ramakrishna says, but when the sun of knowledge arises, when you understand the nature of that Sagun Brahman, which is the Nirguna state, which is the state of conscious, divine consciousness, when you understand that, then the iceberg melts back into the ocean. It becomes water again. So the form dissolves into the formless. So when the sun of knowledge arises, when Advaita Jnana genuinely arises, you transcend the mind and you intuit consciousness as it is. And you understand that is the reality of being. So you see in this wonderful parable, Sri Ramakrishna has summarized all these systems of thought and all aspects of sadhana. Sakar upasana, saguna upasana, nirakar upasana, nirguna upasana, all of these. See, they are not contradictory to each other. Or if you study the spiritual heritage of India, you will see for a long time all these systems of thoughts were at loggerheads with each other. Everyone claiming their stand alone is right. Sri Ramakrishna has harmonized everything. According to the nature of the devotee's devotion, God comes with form and accepts that particular emotion, sentiment of the bhakta. And with the rising of knowledge, that very same form dissolves into the formless. Just like how, you see, when your small child comes in front of you, are you going to be play the role which you play in your office? Are you going to be a professor or are you going to be a CEO? No, you become like the child. You become like a mother towards the child. And you will talk to him in his language. You will express yourself to him in his language, in front of the little child. Isn't it? So also God comes to us with form and with the bhav which we wish to see. So all of this is true. It is not to compartmentalize the nature of God. In fact, Sri Ramakrishna concludes this parable by saying he is with form and without form and again beyond both and many other things besides. Nobody can limit God. Nobody can say God is only this much and nothing more than this. So the jiva actually cannot limit or define God. He can only plunge into God. God consciousness. So this is the remarkable example which Sri Ramakrishna gives us. Besides, there is another reason also why Jnana Mishrita Bhakti is very much required. You know, it is a constitutional necessity with us. We have these elements of emotion, will, intellect, and the propensity for action. All of these are inbuilt in the human personality. So then shouldn't they all be made into means towards the supreme goal of life? Our modern education trains us to develop each of these faculties. So how can you dispense with them? Even in the process of our sadhana, they must find place. And that is why the harmonization of yogas is what Ramakrishna Vivekananda recommended as the means to sadhana and not just one path. The harmonization of yogas, bringing bhakti, jnana, meditation, karma, all of these together is very important. So, yes, is there anything? Can I continue?
Yes, Devi.
Okay, then let's come to this very important concept which you find in the works of Madhusudan Saraswati. See, when whenever we have we find a collision between bhakti and jnana, it is only the uninspired, uncultivated emotion that acts as an obstacle in spiritual life. But this particular passage, let me quote the passage first for you. Dvaitam mohaya bodhat prak prapte bodhe manishaya bhaktyartham kalpitam dvaitam advaitadapi sundaram. Madhusudan Saraswati says, you see, this emotion is an obstacle only to the unawakened. When man awakens to the truth of his own divine being, then how will he use emotion? The emotion actually lights up in his awareness. Because only a completely purified mind can attain to the highest state of awareness, enlightenment. So his emotion then does not act as a block. And it becomes a natural way of enjoying, relating with that aspect of God, which is with form, with attributes, the same Advaita, Nirgun Brahman, can be related, you can form a relationship with him through this way, through bhakti. Bhaktyartham kalpitam dvaitam advaitadapi sundaram. That bhakti which is invoked, and that dvaita, that sense of duality which is invoked for the sake of bhakti, that becomes more beautiful than the knowledge of Advaita. See, this is a very meaningful passage. Again, it is telling us that emotion is only a problem to the unawakened. You awaken yourself to pure knowledge, then emotion becomes very much a help. Not just a help, a way to relate with the personal aspect of God. Duality is no more a problem. Duality is not to be overcome. Duality is to be exercised and practiced so as to enjoy the nature of God with bhakti. So this is how, in fact, you find this in the life of Sri Ramakrishna, reaching the highest state of consciousness. Still he comes back and he lives in the state of bhavamukha. That particular, you can say, threshold between the personal and impersonal aspects, between the saguna and nirguna aspects. He lives in that threshold and gives out his message and lives a life of complete God consciousness, relating with all aspects of God, the personal and the impersonal. Don't we find this in the life of Sri Ramakrishna? See, I just found a very beautiful passage in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna where the same thing is mentioned. Sri Ramakrishna is talking of how he sees this world. He says, at one place, I ran to a meadow to see how living beings are sustained. I saw ants crawling there. It appeared to me that every place was filled with consciousness. I saw this, he says. And then Sri Ramakrishna turns to M. He's talking with M. Hasra enters the room at that time. And Sri Ramakrishna turns to M and says, you know, this is how I experience this world. And then immediately he goes to Samadhi, that state of deep absorption in God. He is dwelling immersed in that state for a long time. Just like how you see the picture of Sri Ramakrishna, like that, completely immersed in God consciousness. And as if there is no life in him, it appears like that. For a long time he is in that state, then the tears of ecstasy come into his eyes. He gradually opens into the reality of this world, into normal consciousness. He had touched the highest peak of consciousness. Now he comes back to normal consciousness, he opens his eyes and M sees that it is swimming in joy, in bliss. He is radiating bliss. You see, the description is so beautiful, I can't help but quote M. He says, he began to laugh like a boy and paced the room. His eyes radiated bliss as if he had seen a wondrous vision. His gaze was not fixed on any particular object and his face beamed with joy. Still facing the room, Sri Ramakrishna said, I saw the Paramahamsa who stayed under the banyan tree, walking thus with just such a smile. He tells M. And then Sri Ramakrishna says, you know, when grief and sorrow leave the mind, one enters this state. See, what a beautiful expression of the highest state of God consciousness. When grief and sorrow leave the mind, one attains to this state. Then Sri Ramakrishna sits on a couch and he's talking to the Divine Mother. Immediately, you see, again there's a shift into divine consciousness. He starts talking with her and he says, but Mother, doesn't a Paramahamsa require a mother? That is why I want you. A Paramahamsa also requires a mother. I don't want the dry knowledge of Advaita Mother. I want devotion at your lotus feet. See, let me again quote Sri Ramakrishna's own words because they are very powerful. He says, mere knowledge of Advaita, I spit on it. Though exists as long as thou dost keep the ego in me. The Paramahamsa is but a child. Doesn't a child need a mother? And M is flabbergasted to see this. See, what a beautiful combination of bhakti and jnan. The highest bhakti and the highest jnan. He is coming out of that supreme state of Nirgun Brahman just to relate with the personal aspect of God in this manner and to give us the wisdom of his states. So this is what the scriptures are speaking of. Bhakti and jnan. They are not two different things. They alternate in spiritual life. They crisscross and in their ultimately right form, you will see that they are both the same. They are not different. It is in complete awareness that the bhakti vritti shines. And it is through bhakti that jnana can be got. In fact, Raman Maharshi used to say, bhakti is jnana mata. Bhakti is the very mother of jnana, the highest knowledge. And the bhakta is the bhakti, the power of bhakti is described even in the Bhagavad Gita. In such solemn words, it is described in the Bhagavad Gita that the jnani is a eka bhakti. He has eka bhakti for the Supreme Lord. And that is why he is dearest to the Supreme Lord. This is how it is described. So let me just quote that passage from the Bhagavad Gita for you. It will show us, it will prove the truth of Sri Ramakrishna's words on bhakti and jnana. This, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is put like this, in the words of Sri Krishna. Chaturvidha bhajante maam, jana sukriti norjana, artho jinyasu artharthi jnani cha bharatashabha. Desham jnani nitya yukta eka bhakti vishishyate, priyohi jnani no tyartham, aham sacha mama priyaha. Udara sarva evaite jnani atmaiva vematam. So Sri Krishna is telling Arjun that there are four classes of devotees who are very close to my heart. They are all good people. Udara sarva evaite. Who are they? They are all sukrutina also. And they are very dear to me. Who are they? Artho, the one who is in some form of distress, and that is by calling on the Lord. Jinyasu, the inquirer, one who is interested in the knowledge of the God, of the Supreme. Then, Artharthi, one who is seeking something like wealth. Even this person is dear to the Lord. And Jnani, the knower of the nature of the Lord. So these are the four types of people who call on the Lord. But the jnani, what is his specialty? Then Sri Krishna dwells only on the jnani. He says, the jnani, the speciality of the jnani is eka bhakti vishishyate. He is endowed with supreme devotion towards the supreme goal of life. That is why he becomes a jnani. And that is why he becomes very dear to me. As I am dear to him, he is also very dear to me. And finally he says, Tesham jnani nityayukta eka bhakti vishishyate priyo hi jnani no tyartham aham sacha mama priyaha Udara Sarva Evaite, Yani Atma Eva Vemadam. I like all these four classes. They all are pleasing to me, but the Jnani is my very self. That dear is he to me, the man of supreme knowledge. So you see, what a beautiful combination again of bhakti and jnana. These are the passages through which we should strengthen our sadhana and not simply try to discriminate through an undeveloped intellect. If we try to see, they only appear different. That's called bhakti and jnana. But for the sadhak, he knows very well that they are not different. If you read the life of Sri Ramakrishna's Vedanta Guru, Totapuri, you would find such a beautiful, again, expression of bhakti and jnana there. You see, initially when Totapuri came to Sri Ramakrishna, came to Dakshineshwar, he was the typical ascetic who had attained the highest state of samadhi. He believed in the indomitable power of the human will. He believed in the capacity of the human intellect to grasp the infinite. And he had actually attained the knowledge of Brahman through Nirvikalpa Samadhi. And he knew only this much. So when he came to Sri Ramakrishna in Dakshineshwar, he had one look at Sri Ramakrishna, who was a young man then. And he thought that this is a very special sadhak. And he approached Sri Ramakrishna and said, "Would you like to learn Vedanta from me? I see you are very fit to learn Vedanta." And Sri Ramakrishna tells him, "I will ask my mother and come." Now, Totapuri thinks that his mother, he is attached to his biological mother, that's why he is wanting to tell her. So he says, "Okay, you go and ask your mother and come." Sri Ramakrishna goes straight to the Kali temple. And there he prays to mother, "Mother, should I learn this knowledge?" And Mother Kali tells him, "Yes, my son, he has been sent for that purpose." Then Sri Ramakrishna comes back and tells Totapuri, "Yes, please initiate me to Vedanta." Then the great Vedanta sadhana of Sri Ramakrishna's life takes place. He is initiated into sannyas. After that, Totapuri teaches him the way of meditation in Advaita Vedanta. But whenever Sri Ramakrishna sits for meditation in that little kutiya next to the Panchavati, for those of you who have been to Dakshineshwar, you can visualize Sri Ramakrishna sitting there trying to practice the meditation which Totapuri has taught him. But again and again, the form of the mother, that dear form which sustained his life, his consciousness, that again and again appears in his mind because of his extreme devotion to Shakti, to the Divine Mother. So Mother Kali is constantly in his mind. His thought does not waver anywhere, only on Mother Kali. So now she becomes an obstacle to his Advaita sadhana, Vedanta sadhana. He is not able to transcend this name and form. Then Totapuri sees that he is not able to do it. So he takes a piece of pottery fallen there and he cuts across Sri Ramakrishna's Agnya Chakra, here between the eyebrows. He just pierces there and says, "Now concentrate on this point and cut the mother into two," which means to say transcend name and form. It's a figurative way of saying that. So then Sri Ramakrishna again plunges into samadhi, and when mother's loving image appears in his mind, he is able to transcend that, transcend name and form, and plunge into the state of Nirvikalpa. See, this incident alone shows us the very depths of bhakti, what it can lead to, because Sri Ramakrishna had practiced Sagun Upasana to this extent. There is no other distraction in his mind. Mind completely riveted to mother. So then, her own nature is Nirguna. Immediately he can transcend it into the Nirguna state, into the Nirvikalpa state. So this particular incident of in Sri Ramakrishna's life shows us the importance of Sagun and Sakar Upasana. The world has to be overcome through devotion to the Lord in his aspect with form until it can be transcended into the formless. So then Sri Ramakrishna plunges into Nirvikalpa Samadhi for a full length of 3 days and 3 nights, unbudging, fully immersed in that state, and as if there's no life in the body. Totapuri is simply amazed. He reached this state after 40 years of intense spiritual practice. And here, Sri Ramakrishna immediately enters the state, and after 3 days, the Guru tries to bring the disciple's mind back into the state of normal consciousness through chanting in his ears, Om, Hari Om. Gradually, Sri Ramakrishna's mind descends from the highest state of Nirvikalpa, from the state of supreme God consciousness, into the state of God with form, and into the state of this normal consciousness. And when he opens his eyes, Totapuri is simply delighted, and disciple and guru embrace each other. Now, Totapuri has something to learn from Sri Ramakrishna. So, you know, by the Divine Mother's plan, Totapuri stays back in Dakshineshwar. Usually, he would never stay in a place for more than 3 days. Because he was that very strong ascetic type, he would not stay in the same place. But he stayed in Dakshineshwar for 11 months. Because he had something to learn. The Divine Mother planned it in this way. You see, one day, Totapuri had very severe dysentery and so much of pain in the stomach that he was simply surprised at the way his mind started behaving. It was descending to body consciousness. He's feeling the pain day and night. So he got disgusted. He was not used to bringing the mind to the level of the body. So he got disgusted with this and decided to end his body. After all, he had attained the goal of human life. So that night, he decided to move towards the Ganga and drown in the Ganga, to give up his body in the Ganga. So gradually, as it was dusk, he moved towards the Ganga. Then when everything became quiet and silent and it was completely dark, at night, he started moving towards the, into the river, and he started moving, but wonder of wonders, you know, the ground is always under his feet. There is no water in the Ganga to drown him, as it were. The ground is always under his feet. He moved towards the middle of the Ganga. Those of you who have visited Dakshineshwar, you know that the Ganga, there is a wide expanse of water. And he went almost to the middle of the Ganga. He still feels the ground under his feet. The Ganga is not able to drown him. Finally, he reaches the other shore. And then he realizes that there is something, some divine leela going on here. And then he returns back. And the whole of that night, he spends in meditation on Shakti, the great divine power, which is making manifestation, life possible here. When consciousness is conjoined with Shakti, Brahman is united with Shakti, the Divine Mother, then life becomes possible. And this is the manifestation of life that you see around you. So how can you not acknowledge Shakti, the Divine Mother? He understands this Shakti Tattva and plunges into meditation on the Divine Mother the whole night. You see, our entire striving and not striving, our entire sadhana, the use of all our faculties, the power of our minds, the power of our will, Ichha Shakti, Jnana Shakti, Kriya Shakti, all of this, and the work of the senses, the work of your motor organs, all of this is only the Divine Mother. Everything apart from consciousness is the Divine Mother, Shakti. These are all manifestations of Shakti. How can you deny her? So he realizes that the glory of Shakti, without her nothing is possible. It is only because she opened the key to the knowledge of Brahman that he got it. And he becomes Shakti Pujak, Shakti Sadhak. The next day morning, he is walking to the Kali temple. Sri Ramakrishna joins him. And he bows down full length. In first time he enters the Kali temple. And bows down before Mother Kali. And he is simply thrilled because he only understands the Shakti Tattva. And then when he comes out of the temple, Sri Ramakrishna tells him, "See, I always told you, Amar Ma are Brahma Abhe. My mother and Brahman are not two different things." Sri Ramakrishna used to tell this repeatedly, "Shakti are Brahma Abhe." But we live in the ilaka of Shakti, under the jurisdiction of Shakti. That is why Shakti Sadhana, Saguna Upasana, Sakar Upasana is so important. That is why Bhakti is so important. And that is why in Sri Ramakrishna's philosophy you find this all-comprehensive vision of harmonizing the four yogas and not thinking them to be different. So this is how Totapuri, even in Shankaracharya's life, you can see this, how he accepted Shakti, the Divine Mother. There are such beautiful incidents. So you see in the lives of these great ones, how they, in their own personal life, they have harmonized the highest bhakti and the highest jnana. If we go to the Upanishads, there you can see Brahman is described as Sat, Chit and Anand Swarup. He is of the nature of existence, consciousness and bliss. But you know, this is a kind of objective definition. In the sense, now existence, how does it exactly feel to me, to the subject? It feels as asmi, asti, I am. This amness in us. This corresponds to Sat. It corresponds to the Sat aspect of Satchidananda. And what corresponds to the Chit aspect? Chit is consciousness. So our conscious feeling of any experience, that is the manifestation of Chit in the subject. And Ananda, bliss, how does it express in us? As love, as dearness. So this Ananda aspect of Brahman, it is called Priya in the first person, in the subject. It is, you see, Satchidananda in the first person, in the subject, becomes Asti Bhati Priya. So this Priya aspect, which is the Ananda aspect of Brahman, is what is called Bhakti. You know, this is the actual description of Bhakti in the Upanishad. So that is why the Upanishads are sort of Bhakti Shastras, because the Ananda aspect of Brahman is there. That is why Mahapurush Maharaj, Swami Shivananda, he used to actually say that the Upanishads are Bhakti Shastras. You find Rasovayasaha in the Upanishad, in the Chandogya Upanishad. You find description of God, Brahman, as the very embodiment of Rasa. And in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, you have such beautiful passages saying that everything is dear because of the presence of Brahman. Nava are sarvam kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati, atmanastu kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati. You find passages like this. Anything is dear only because of the presence of the Atman, because it is of the nature of Satchit Ananda. Ananda aspect is there, that is why that thing becomes dear. So you see, in the Upanishads, it's not that Upanishads are only Jnana Marga, only Advaita. Not so. You will find all these beautiful passages there. If we are prepared to discover, you will see that bliss is just scattered in the Upanishads. You have the very beautiful Vidya, Madhu Vidya in the Upanishads. You chant it. It's a peace chant. Madhuvata hitayate madhukshananti sindhavaha madvina santoshati madhunattamutoshasi madhumat parthivagam rajaha madhudyaurastuna pita madhumano vanaspati madhumagumastu suryaha. Everything is dripping bliss, the Rishi is saying. Everything. These winds, these forests, these trees, these leaves, these waters. Everything is dripping honey. It is dripping bliss. His mind has plunged into the state of God consciousness, Brahman. That is why he sees everything dripping bliss. So this is an expression of bhakti. The peace chant itself is bhakti. So you see, the Upanishads also talk of this. I already told you the Bhagavad Gita. It is the essence of the Upanishads. There also you find bhakti yoga, jnana yoga, everything dealt with. And how God sees the jnani. Even in the purely bhakti shastras, like for example, the Bhagavatam, there also you will find this combination of bhakti and jnana. You know, it's really beautiful. Raja Parikshit is asking Shukdev at one point, he tells Shukdev, when the Krishna Leela is being discussed, Shukdev has a doubt. And he says, Raja Parikshit has a doubt. So he interrupts Shukdev and says, can you please remove this doubt from my head? And Shukdev says, yes, please tell me your doubt, Raja. And then Parikshit says, see, the Lord comes in a human form to establish righteousness in every age. He has promised this. So Lord Krishna's birth also is to establish righteousness in society. But Sri Krishna did many things which are against our social norms. Like for example, he played with the gopis at night. He drew them to him. The Ras Leela took place. So how do you explain all this? This cannot be a model for society. So when Parikshit asks this question, see, it's a very pertinent question. Then Shukdev says, O Parikshit, you have not understood the Krishna Leela. Let me explain it to you here. You see, these gopis, these cowherd girls of Vrindavan, they were great rishis with the highest knowledge. So they were very pure-hearted. So pure-hearted were they. They had come in the form of these young girls. But they were so pure-hearted that only the Supreme Lord shone in their hearts. So when Krishna looked at them, he saw himself manifested in them. He saw his own bhav. They were like mirror images of him. So he only played with himself. He only drew his own self in a different form to himself. From his standpoint, there was no duality. And how did the gopis look upon Sri Krishna? That is also beautifully described in the Gopi Gitam. Nakhalu Gopika Nandano Bhavan Akhila Dehinam Antarat Madrik. These are their words. They say, O Krishna, we know you are not merely the son of Yashoda and Nanda. We know this very well. You are the Antarat Madrik, the supreme witness consciousness in all beings. You are the Atman in all beings. You are Brahman itself. We know this is your nature. You are the Antaryamin. And that is why we relate with you. See, what a beautiful, again, combination of bhakti and jnana. Bhakti ultimately is due to the highest jnana. And jnana ultimately is due to eka bhakti. So you actually cannot sort of say that they are two different things. Like this, there are very many beautiful, let me give you some more examples from Sri Ramakrishna's life. We have another 10-15 minutes. So let me give you this example of from Sri Ramakrishna. See, he says to Narendranath, Narendranath is sitting in front of him, and Sri Ramakrishna tells him, Narendranath, as you know, is the future Vivekananda. As a young college boy, he would visit Sri Ramakrishna. And one day when he was sitting at his feet, Sri Ramakrishna tells him, O Naren, when will you plunge into the ocean of God consciousness? You know, this is an ocean which will liberate you. When will you plunge into it? Then he gives him an example. He says, look Naren, suppose there was a cup of syrup and you were a fly. How would you drink the syrup in that cup? And then Naren says, why, I would go and lodge myself in a corner of the cup and stick out my head and sip the syrup in the cup. Because, you know, if I proceeded further, I would drown in the syrup. Then Sri Ramakrishna immediately says, but my son, oh, Nare, he says, not like that. You know, this cup of syrup It is the ocean of Sachidananda. If you drown into it, you become immortal. You don't lose consciousness. How can you lose consciousness? By plunging into Supreme Consciousness. So, Jnan is actually plunging into the Supreme Consciousness of Brahman. It is being and becoming. It is not knowing something objectively. And it is only possible when, if you have tasted and known that syrup, isn't it? Bhakti, loving that syrup, is the way to plunge into it. So, in this beautiful example, Sri Ramakrishna is actually telling us the nature of this knowledge. Swarupa Jnana is imbued with the highest bhakti. It is tasting the syrup of God consciousness, of immortality. And when Sri Ramakrishna said this, Naren is all smiles. You become immortal when you dive into the ocean of God consciousness. So you see what a beautiful description again we find here. Let me give you one more incident. You must have... Yes, this is, you see, Sri Ramakrishna says, a man must work. Work here means meditation, japa, chanting God's name and the like. You may also include charity and sacrifice. But if you want butter, let me tell you, you must set milk into curd. For that, you must place that milk in a quiet corner of your room, of a room. Once it is well set into curd, you have to churn it through further work, further spiritual practice. And that is how you draw butter. So sadhana is ultimately most important for the cultivation of both bhakti and jnana. Let us remember this. Only with sadhana we understand the nature and power of bhakti and the immensity of jnana. So, Sri Ramakrishna is telling us through this parable, go into solitude now and then. This is practical bhakti. Think of the Lord continuously. Set the curd and then you churn it. You will get the butter of God consciousness. So, practically speaking, the disciplines of bhakti are very important in our lives. Today, you see, in this modern world, we have simply no time for these disciplines. We act like that. But you know, if you don't have time for the most important things in your life, obviously, you know where our life will be going, isn't it? For the most crucial things in your life, if we don't have time, if we can't manufacture time, then we will be the losers. So some form of bhakti sadhana in our homes on an everyday basis, it's a great step towards developing the ultimate knowledge. And for this, in the past, you know very well, we have seen our mothers and grandmothers, there was a regular ritual performed at home. Some form of puja, some form of adoration of the Supreme, going down to the Supreme, aarti, one bout of real aarti performed will give you so much of satisfaction. So, inculcating these little disciplines into our life, at least for 10 minutes every day, if we can do this, a 5-minute meditation, dhyana on our ishtam. So, these disciplines of bhakti itself gives you an air of purity, a system of values which you see no legislation can inculcate. Just the practice of these simple disciplines will bring that into our system. So this is so very important if we want to cultivate real knowledge and God consciousness. Never dispense with the bhakti discipline, disciplines of bhakti. And Sri Ramakrishna also, that is why you see, he insists on this. Isn't it? He says that you see, you have come here, the human birth, it has only one purpose. According to Sri Ramakrishna, what is that purpose? The realization of God. No matter what we are doing, what we are earning, how we are living, what our professions are, there is only one purpose. It is all meant for that. to acknowledge this and to deliberately decide the course of our life towards the supreme goal of human life. This is what requires to be done on an everyday basis. This is what is sadhana. So, making everything into a sadhana is real genius, isn't it? Whatever is there in our life, turning it towards the supreme, making it into a sadhana. So, this is the importance of the bhakti sadhana. Our entire emotion should flow towards the Lord and not get invested merely in the family, merely towards our relationships, but an ability to turn all of this towards the Supreme Lord. Because after all, that is the goal of our life, isn't it? These are all the means, but that is the goal. Sri Ramakrishna says, you have come on this earth to eat mangoes. You have come into the orchard to eat mangoes. You have not come merely to count the number of trees and twigs and branches and the number of mangoes. You have come to eat mangoes. So, dive into bhakti sadhana. Get the taste for God, for devotion, for the supreme consciousness. And then nobody will have to tell us to perform sadhana. We will actually plunge into it. So, in such beautiful parables, Sri Ramakrishna is giving us the message of harmonizing bhakti and jnana to reach the supreme goal of human life. I think we will stop here. For a long time we have discussed bhakti and jnana. If there is time, we can take up one or two questions. Otherwise, I think time is almost up. So I will stop here. It is my prayer to Sri Ramakrishna that he bless us with the supreme knowledge and supreme love in this very life and make it a blessed offering at his feet. Jai Thakur, Jai Ma.